Hello and welcome back to the DPUK podcast. I'm Chloe, dancer turned physio, and this is where we discuss all things mind and body when it comes to the health of performers. Looking out for the next generation of dancers has always been my mission, and that starts with open and honest conversations. So come inside and listen as we open up the clinic conversations that I have every day with all the amazing people who have been exactly where you are now. I just want to preface this conversation by saying that this episode contains discussions about emotional abuse, power imbalances, and bullying within dance schools. The content includes descriptions of manipulative behaviour, psychological control, and personal accounts of emotional trauma. There is also some use of strong language. Please prioritise your mental well-being and consider whether listening to this episode is right for you. Support resources are provided in the episode description, and for those who may feel that they need to reach out to someone who can help. Today's clinic conversation is going to be a little bit different from some of the other episodes. It's going to be a very open and honest conversation between myself and Shannon, who was on the last episode. We went through all of Shannon's story from starting in dance through to where she is now as a PT, working in movement for mental health rather than just for the physical side of it. So if you haven't already listened, go back and listen to that. We missed out a huge chunk in the middle, which is a huge part of Shannon's story, but also my own kind of training and my own kind of journey to where I am now, which was the experience of vocational ballet training. We both went to Ballet West and we were there in the same year. So I thought what would be useful just for anyone who maybe needed to feel heard, who has been through vocational training, has experienced things that we've experienced, for us to just both openly and candidly really discuss some of the things that went on. So I've got a few themes down that we're going to run through, but Shannon is also here, so thank you, Shannon, for having this conversation with me. Yeah, hello again. Having this conversation with me too. I don't even know where to start, really. I feel like from what you were saying in the last episode, that we both kind of came into Ballet West from the same almost mindset of, like, we both really had lovely experiences in dance industry before we went to vocational training. Both of us, as you mentioned, like, no, you said National Youth Ballet.
Yeah, National Youth Ballet and English Youth Ballet.
Whereas
yeah.
I was like English Youth Ballet. All my favourite like memories are from performances like that or Mardi Gras. Did you ever do Mardi Gras?
It was, I like, didn't Royal Albert Hall. But I feel like, oh, I think my sister might have. Yeah, I think she might have done Mardi Gras. Yeah.
Because that, again, I did that a couple times, like Sadler's Wells. I did wonder, because you mentioned a couple big theatres, and I was like, oh, I wonder if that was Mardi Gras. But there are definitely some of my favourite performance memories. So I feel like we both kind of went into Ballet West with this almost like, oh, we've made it, like, vocational school, here we are, let's be ballet dancers, which is kind of, like, nice that we can both start in that shared experience. I wonder if we, rather than jumping into something maybe a little bit heavier to begin with, we kind of go to those like first few weeks of Ballet West. I believe you're in the same class as me, in the like group two or whatever.
Yes,
we call
Yeah.
But for me, like, that was it. That was my dream. I'd made it. I'd completed life. I was at ballet school and I'd escaped everything else that I wanted to escape. And it was just incredible. How was your kind of first few weeks?
So I think the first year, mainly, I had such an amazing time, as in, I, you know, loved what I, but I was obviously living my dream. I was living with, you know, mates, we got to do what we wanted, and I think just doing dance every day, and then obviously then we got to like some choreography things, and then obviously the tour, so we toured around Scotland with the ballet like company and the shows. So I think most of my first year, yeah, just really loved it, like that, living the dream. I was like, this is what I've been waiting
for. So your first year was probably like my second year.
Yeah.
Because my first year was horrific.
No. Not starting off rough.
Yeah, I probably started off the worst, and then like second year was like the best year ever in my head, kind of in the time and like just afterwards, and then third year kind of like plateaued everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, first year tour. What was first year tour?
Swan Lake, I think
Swan
it was.
Lake, yes, yeah. Yes. Because were you in, I think I was like Polonaise or something?
Yeah, I think I was in that one with you.
Like basically the big group dance that they put everyone else, that they didn't know where to put them.
Yeah, I think I did that. And then I can't really remember much else of like my role in that show.
Oh, I think
I remember
just
the first bit. Yeah, I remember that first big dance. Maybe I understudied. Was it Shardas or something? Did you do Shardas?
No, I did do Shardas. Yeah, oh my gosh, honestly.
I went on a few times.
How do you remember that and I don't?
Yes.
I have honestly
blocked out. I just vaguely remember seeing you in that costume.
Yes, I did do that. I've forgotten about that. Because this is one thing that I've really realised over the last few years is that I've blocked out so many memories that I didn't realise I'd blocked out.
Yeah.
And not just bad memories, like good things as well, like that. And one of my other friends, we were chatting and I was like, she was saying about some rehearsal somewhere. And I was like, I don't remember anything you're talking about. Yeah. And that's a little bit scary.
Yeah, I feel the same that I, like that through the past few years, chatting to people who were there and they're like, oh, do you remember this thing? And I was like, wait, what? It was like, that person was there or that happened or wait, that, yeah. It's because it just like, feels like it all just mushes into one.
Yeah.
Or like that you blocked out stuff that happened until someone actually reminds you, like, oh my gosh, that actually did happen.
Yes.
And you did do that part and I forgot that you were that. And
yes, yeah. Which is then what I was saying to you in the last episode, but I'll repeat just in case anyone's not heard that, is when your face was on ITV News, that for me was that moment where all these memories came back, all this stuff that I had like put into a box, tied it up with a cute little ribbon, like a nice little pink ballet shoe ribbon, and put it into the back of my mind so that I never had to ever think about it again.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my moment where I was like, oh, I need to start untying this ribbon and actually like processing some of this stuff that went on. But again, I think even from that moment, I've definitely had this almost, I'm getting over it now, but like this almost, I didn't have it as bad as other people.
Yeah.
And that's something that's definitely stopped me talking, is that, oh, but my experience wasn't as bad as this person, or this person had it way worse than I did. So when I started unpacking this box, I'm like, oh no, there's some stuff in here that needs to be sorted out. Let's go into, I feel like, so I have kind of pre-planned a little bit of this because I know for sure that us two could probably talk for hours and hours and hours and recall hundreds of different stories, and I just want to kind of keep it a little bit on track. So for anyone listening, what I've tried to do is make something that could turn quite negative into maybe pulling out a couple positives here and there, because that's just who I am. I like everything to be a lesson, or like what's made you who you are now. So I've split into a few different themes and then almost taking what we've learned and how we kind of now, I guess, use that in our everyday life for a good reason. And again, Shannon uses a lot of what she's learned and turns it around and has to be more of a positive effect in her work too. I think let's just go with health. This is my big one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could talk for ages about injuries and health and mental health and everything else. For you, you said it was more second year.
Yeah.
That kind of took the little tumble.
So I think second year, I suppose first year, I felt like I was in a bubble and I was kind of like, everything is like rainbows and unicorns. I was like, yeah. But I think by the end of first year, going into second year, that's when it kind of hit that things weren't really right. And I suppose comments in class, and I could see a lot of people kind of deteriorating, maybe their mental health and stuff. And I suppose that's when it was like, right, okay, something's not really right here.
Yes, I suppose second year was, now you say it, that is where then a lot of people dropped out in first year, right?
Yeah.
How many people were in our first year and how many people were in our second
year? Yeah, I'm pretty sure our year was cut in half. As in, I'm pretty sure there was like at least 23 maybe people, and it went down to 13.
So how was it more? I'm sure it was like late 20s.
Because we had two classes.
That's what I mean, we had enough people for two whole classes. So then,
for a whole, like, half of the year to go,
it must have been 50% dropout.
Yeah, definitely, at least, yeah.
Which just tells you enough in itself, really, doesn't it? Like, if half the people are dropping out of a degree course or a training course after
their
a year,
first year, when that's meant to be the best, you know, the new thing, it says a lot.
Yeah. Okay, so then you kind of noticed everyone else dropping a little bit around you. I guess, though, I suppose that brings into, so, because from part of the reason my first year was difficult was because I was having these like functional seizures, which is something I talk about with people now and friends now, that never anyone who was there from the other side of it when it was happening. So it's kind of strange now to have this conversation with you, who probably sees it from like a different perspective as well. But I've kind of touched on it online a little bit, but basically I was really, really ill. Oh my gosh, there's so many layers to this. I was really ill in first year, just a normal like cold or flu or something. It was nothing like crazy, but because of the culture and what we were taught, and because I was very driven and motivated and like pushed myself so hard and worked so hard, is I made myself still go up to the studio when I was so ill. And I remember sitting in the common room
and being like, actually feeling like I'm not okay, but just almost trying to push past it. Mm-hmm. And like everyone went off to ballet. And I then was with the second and third years, and one of the second years was like, are you okay? And I was like, no, I'm actually not. And I stood up and I went in the other room with her, had a seizure, like full body seizure, like awful experience. Went to hospital, came back. Next day, same thing happened. But we were like down in the houses. And then from that moment on, maybe like, I want to say as regular as like every other day, maybe every day, I was having these functional seizures in class, walking down the hill. If anyone doesn't know, Ballet West was up a mountain, so you had to walk up and down a hill every day. A mountain, a literal mountain with like a huge lot and a deer farm. It was massive. But like, just all the time. But the culture of Ballet West, we normalised that.
Yeah, because I remember like in ballet class, we'd see you like obviously collapse, and I'd be like, oh, she'll be fine, she's turning around. It's like, we were just like, oh, maybe she's got some other health condition. That's fine, let's just continue with our plies.
Yeah, like, if we just continued.
But looking back, mental to think that we were just like, and I remember, like, in singing, like, you'd have a siege and then come around, you'd be fine. But we were just all like, oh, yeah, cool.
That's
like,
just Chloe.
Yeah, it was like, oh, yeah, cool, yeah, she should be fine. It's like, mental to think that because we were just like, oh, well, it's just a...
It's just
a couple minutes disturbance and she'll be back up on her feet.
Yeah, but the fact that then I was getting back on my feet straight away and carrying on as well.
Yeah,
like that.
And you were in class, that would, like, looking back now, thinking, yeah, I never even processed that she's just had a seizure, but now she's doing a jumping, like, Allegro class, like, after, like...
And just being, I remember, like, one teacher just almost, like, pushing me to the side of the room.
Yeah!
And then everyone carrying on. Because also when I had these functional seizures, I was conscious most of the time. There was only a couple times where I, like, stopped breathing or, like, don't remember it, which is also a bit scary. But, like, most of the time I was still conscious. If I could keep my eyes open, I could kind of see. So I could see everything still going on around me. And again, I just jumped up and carried on, which is not okay. And looking back at little 16-year-old me, I'm like, how did I ever deal with that? I can't imagine now going through life being like, oh, I just have a seizure. Oh, it's fine. I'll just start. Yeah. If I had a seizure now, like on the train going to work, that would be like the day
going
over.
And then you'd obviously, you've recovered at least a day or so, like... Maybe then see what was causing what's going on. Yeah. And
crazy.
You wouldn't be like jumping back in.
Mad. So that was mostly my first year experience, was that I was trying to like deal with that as well as everything else as well. But that is, I think, just such a perfect example of how health is just the last thing that you think about.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, so many people that were there, it was the same thing, like, your ballet performance comes number one. You in class is the first important thing before nutrition, before health, before your head.
Well, nutrition's a whole other. I didn't even have that on my
that's
list.
A whole other thing.
That's crazy.
I suppose that, which it shouldn't be. It should be all of those things first, and then you in the class should be the final bit and your final performance.
Yeah.
But it's, everyone, I say, would be in class. And I remember our teacher said... And I remember it throughout the 3 years, I'm sure you mentioned it multiple times, he said, unless you're on your deathbed, you are in class.
Yeah.
And then that sticks with people, like, well, okay, I'm
am
really
I dying?
Ill. Yeah, am I in hospital right now? No, so I can go to class. Or, okay, my leg's sore, I've got this injury, but I'm not in hospital, I'm not dead, so I've got to go to class.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
do you know
maybe...
what? You've just, again, I feel like this is going to be a whole podcast of my memories unlocking, but I was hospitalised after one of them. And the first person that came to visit me was that teacher. And he came in. And I remember the conversation.
Are you dead?
Was, yeah. No. Imagine.
Get to class.
Imagine, yeah. No, but actually, like, jokes aside, the actual conversation was, when are you going to be back? And I was like, oh, don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow, next day. Like, that was a conversation in the hospital bed. Also a little bit strange that the first person to come see me is my ballet teacher.
Yeah, that's...
But I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit more. But yeah, that was, I think, first year, one of the things that now looking back, I'm like, yeah, I really battled with that. But in the moment, 16-year-old me, that wasn't my biggest worry.
Yeah.
Which is also mad. Like, the mindset wise, that wasn't my biggest thing that I was like, oh, I need to sort this. My biggest things were a whole multitude of other things related to parts in tour and how good I was doing in class and all this other kind of side of it. So yeah, nice that your first year was good. I'm glad that you enjoyed your first year.
So I enjoyed it, yeah.
But now we're going to flip it round.
And then we got...
yeah, because my second year, so by second year I'd kind of like, without going into too much detail, because they were functional seizures, it was something that I had some conscious... I don't want to go into it too much because function, like FND is a really complicated thing and I don't want to oversimplify it or say anything that would come across badly towards FND, because that is something that can be really, really sensitive to a lot of people. But by second year, basically I'd managed to get on top of the symptoms, which meant that my second year was the best year of my life. And then obviously things start going wrong on your side. Mm-hmm. What would you say? Would you say it was more like your mental health or a bit of both? I feel like they run so closely together.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the time the years kind of blend into one, but I feel second year was more my mental health. And I suppose with that culture, I felt like there was underlying bullying between like the students, and also I suppose the teachers were starting to get a little bit bullying that way, nasty, but also I noticed around me so many mental health issues. Mm-hmm. We had multiple eating disorders, self-harming, depression, so much was going on, and I suppose that was kind of getting to me because I'm always, I suppose you said yourself as well, you try and take on everyone else's issues and feel worried about everyone else.
Yeah, so we were talking about this earlier and we were saying about how I think we were both very self-aware but also almost over-aware at such a young age of how everyone else was doing.
Yeah.
I think when you are that person, you do take on more.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose I was then letting that get to me that these girls were very ill, and obviously in our first year we had a few that had to leave because of their eating disorders. I suppose I was just getting so annoyed that there was these adults and members of staff that were in charge of 16-year-olds. So I went when I was 18, so I was slightly older. But they were in charge of these girls that had been away from home. You know, they're in charge of their safety and they just weren't being looked after. And it was just brushed over. You know, I remember a girl very ill with anorexia and being physically pulled out by another teacher out of class because obviously she's getting to the point where she could be at risk of heart attack or anything like that. And I was thinking, like, nothing has been done or was brushed over. Like, oh, they're fine, they're looking good. I think one teacher said, oh, well, she's looking really good now because she's lost the weight. And I suppose in second year that was coming more to light with that body image and telling people to lose weight. Mm-hmm. And then I'm very naturally slim, always been since I was very little. But I suppose then girls who are told to lose weight, they were then turning that against me, being like, well, you're lucky you've got that.
And oh,
I suppose,
really?
Yeah, so a lot of then, you know, a few girls would then say that to me that I lived with, be like, well, you can eat whatever you want, you're lucky, some of us have to. And I suppose then I felt bad, like, oh, well, I'm naturally skinny, now I feel bad, like, it's not my fault I was born with a very, like, high metabolism. But I suppose then that's when the bullying and it was all the culture, I guess, was coming to light in second year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think... Again, I'm going to keep saying we said this earlier. It's because we had a bit of a discussion and catch up earlier, just so I knew what we were going to like touch on. I didn't want to touch anything that wasn't comfortable. But for me, I was very aware of, I think, that it was going on around me. Like, I think at Ballet West specifically, we almost had it under a magnifying glass, because the school wasn't regulated and we were in such isolation that I think some of the things that the students past and present, or not present anymore because it's gone, but part, like, as in before us and after us, would have experiences that everything was under that magnifying glass. So I think our experiences are almost an exaggeration of what happens in a lot of other schools. And the reason I bring that up is because when you say about the eating disorders, there were girls who I remember looking at and being like they're see-through. But still now looking back, thinking that, but still not thinking there was anything wrong with it.
Yeah.
And that's the scary bit.
Yeah.
And even now looking back at girls who did struggle with food and girls that are my friends now, but like they were struggling with food back then, but I never noticed because to me, my normal body type, like what I looked at other people and saw them as like, oh, ballet dancer, rather than saw them as too skinny.
Yeah.
And it's not until you look back now that you're like, that wasn't okay. Because we had the such extreme versions of it, and to the point where people were so unwell, that then anyone that was in this like middle ground, none of us probably even thought, like, oh, they've got an issue.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's so scary.
Mm-hmm. And I think because, like you said, with the magnifying glass, because we were so secluded, like, if people don't know about Ballet West, we were in the Highlands of Scotland. Like, our nearest Tesco was half an hour drive away. Like,
Oh my gosh. I sometimes... Distance. Who was I talking about this with? And I was like, we... Because I didn't drive. And in first year, no one drove that I lived with. So for me to go get my Tesco shop for the week, I used to have to walk 10 minutes to the train station, get on an over 30 minute train, walk another 15, 20 minutes to Tesco, do my Tesco shop, carry all the Tesco bags back through down to the train station.
Yeah, hang around for a few hours because they'd only come every 3 hours or something.
Yes. Yeah, there were like no trains.
Two a day.
Yeah, come all the way back. And then what, we had a corner shop, but you can't do a healthy food shop in a corner shop. Yeah. Like,
and I it's just expensive because they put up the price, obviously. But
But that even in itself is like not a good place to be in when you're then surrounded also with this like diet culture.
Yeah.
And I do think that was now, looking back, I do think that was pushed on us more from teachers than at the time I thought it was.
Yeah.
Like, the whole body shaming, I mean, it comes back to, like, you don't know how powerful your words are. Like, teachers saying things that maybe was even meant in a compliment that actually had, like, a terrible effect on people's mental health and surrounding body image, too. Mm,
definitely. Yeah, and I think, you know, even maybe the end of first year, but definitely second year and onwards, you know, living with people who had been told to lose weight and then seeing that effect on them in the kitchen. Like, I was only really... I lived with maybe 8 people, and I rarely saw anyone else in the kitchen at dinner time rather than me cooking. It was very rare that anyone else, like, the guys would come in, but the girls I'd rarely see, or they just come in, get a snack and go off. So because they've been told, well, maybe you need to, but the thing with the losing weight, they never, like, told them in a healthy way, you know, maybe gain muscle or nothing like that. Just like, you're fat, lose weight.
Yeah.
And the first thing people are going to think, don't eat.
Which I think now in both the professions that we're in, and being so much more aware of health and diet now, is that actually you're not going to lose weight by eating nothing either.
No.
So then you just get this vicious cycle. Yeah. Like, as in, when I finished, this was a kind of a strange, kind of skipping past Ballet West, but one of the strange experiences I had was when I was like, okay, I'm not going to do ballet anymore. I'm going to get really hench in the gym. And I was like, I'm going to eat loads of food, I'm going to train in the gym, do heavy training, and I'm going to get hench, and it's going to be a bit of like a fuck you to ballet.
Yeah.
I got skinnier, like, as in I got like more toned, I built muscle mass, but I looked stronger and thinner than I ever did at Ballet West.
Yeah.
And I remember looking in the mirror and being like, this was not the plan.
Yeah. Like, what? I wanted to go bulking.
Yeah. I wanted to get bigger. And then I was like, wait, there's something in this. And that's kind of part of what... kind of led me into doing everything I do now, of like, actually, if we had just had proper education whilst we were training on nutrition, then those people who got in those cycles would have got into really, because obviously the mentality's there, as in like, they want to do well, but that would have like moved more into like, okay, I'm going to fuel myself well, maybe do a little bit more cross training, not for weight loss but for like strength, and then just think how, like, we would have been athletes. It would have been incredible.
Because I think I discussed with someone recently, actually, who was a dancer, that dancers are athletes. And you see these Olympians, like, there's that swimmer that was famous for having his 4,000-calorie breakfast, which is crazy to think. But because he's obviously burning a hell of a lot when he's swimming. So he had 4,000 calories for breakfast and all, like, random stuff, like hash browns and all sorts of stuff. But then you think the dance world is so different because we're told calories are bad. Well, actually, it should be. You are an athlete. You've got to fuel yourself like an athlete. Like, the Olympians do thousands of calories just for breakfast.
I laughed earlier when you said about nutrition because you, again, unlocked memory of when we had a nutrition lecture.
Yes!
And
she told us to just have a jelly bean or jelly babies.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember that. There was also this, yes, the ham sandwich classic. If you're hungry, just have a ham sandwich.
And a jelly baby.
But I also remember in that same lecture that one of the students had a protein shaker in their bag. I don't know if you remember this.
No.
There was a she just had a delivery of like protein powders and a protein shake. And this nutritionist went in on this student because protein shakes are bad and you shouldn't be taking protein shakes. And looking back now in my professional like brain, maybe what she was trying to get at was that this student shouldn't have been taking protein shakes instead of meals, which is correct. But the way it came across, and I remember it so clearly in that lecture, was you shouldn't be taking in extra calories. Yeah. Like, you shouldn't be taking that extra shake in. And that, to me, is just... like, how was that the mixed messages we were getting? It drives me insane.
Yeah.
And then we were also taught how to cook a roast chicken.
Yes! Yeah, and what you could do with the roast chicken. Yeah.
But also, why just chicken? Why were we taught to cook, again, like, chicken and not all the other important...
protein. Like, I never knew until I left, like, there's so many proteins available other than chicken. Like, there's so much you can have rather than chicken. And also...
but
like,
also, where's the carbs? Other
carbs.
The energy. The things that you need to be able to do the crazy
where's
schedule.
The electrolytes you've got to have after training. All of this that you need.
Mad.
That should have been taught.
Which, again, when you've already got this culture of, like, almost the body shaming, and then that's the nutritional support you're getting. It's not really a good combination. No. You're a load of 16 to 19 year old ballet dancers who all want to be perfect. Yes, that just
lots of memory.
Yeah, oh my gosh, I feel again. I'm going to keep saying that all the way through. The body shaming aspect of it is something that I, again, until recently, didn't really acknowledge as being a huge issue. Again, I was living in my own little brain of my bubble, which I still do now sometimes. For anyone who knows me now, I live in my own little bubble sometimes. But there was definitely a few instances where things were said in classes and things were said that were not even meant in a nice way. Like, I think that there's the stories of these comments that were done in a way that was supposed to be a compliment, I think I mentioned before, that then would, like, have triggered something in someone. And then there's the comments that are just outright rude and not needed.
No, and, like, looking back, like, you look at those comments and think, maybe there was a way it was meant to help you. It's like, no, they were just...
they're just really mean.
And just nasty comments.
Yeah. I don't know if we should go into any, like, specifics. I think I told you some of my stories earlier of, like, a particular teacher and where a lot of my... in fact, probably my only ever body issue came from was one comment or one... I'm going to go into it. This podcast is going to be ages. You can stick around for the next 3 hours if you want. But there was a major, major moment that changed the way that I saw myself through dance training and actually into, like, physio training too, which was from a specific teacher who actually in the class had an iPad out. We'd done pliés, and then during tondus that we did for about 5 or 6 times, I don't know, we were being punished for some reason.
Yeah, he always had this issue that you just have to keep doing it till it was right.
Yeah, so we'd done a lot of tondus by this point. And he went round and was taking pictures on his iPad of body parts of all the girls and boys in our class. And then was sat in the corner of the room and was, like, kind of beckoned us all over like he always used to give us our life lessons, and was flicking through these pictures on an iPad, to which then he got to one of, like, a pelvis, a bum from the side, like, lateral view, sorry, physio talk, from the side, I said that, and basically said that, made some comments about it being, like, a big bouncy ball and watch out because it's going to hit you in the face, and... that it was basically disgusting, and then named the person who I won't name that he thought the pelvis was of or the bum was of. And that person's reaction to that picture, which again, I have no, like, bad feelings towards this person at all. I think, like, we were kind of mentioned before, like, we're all in survival mode, right? Mm. So none of this is, I think, a blame on anything that was said or done from any other students. But that student's reaction was, no, that's not me, that's Chloe. And in that moment, I thought that everything was wrong with me. Like, I obviously then always had this thing where I was like, why is my pelvis shaped like that? Or to me, in my head, it was like, I shouldn't have a bum, which is just a part of me. Mm. That's how I'm built. And it wasn't until that stuck with me so much until later on, like, after I'd stopped dancing, I was in the gym with a girl who didn't have a dance background. And we were talking about, like, what we wanted to be like and, like, our body types, I don't know why. I said about Victoria's Secret models and she was like, no, that's disgusting. And for her to have had the same reaction to me saying about Victoria's Secret models to me, to that girl about me, was then, like, again, like, this little click of, oh, okay, I am allowed to have a bum.
Yeah.
Like, and, but the fact that that stayed with me even past dancing, like, I was still going to the gym, but that, like ideal body shape mm-hmm. was still ingrained in me, and that's scary.
Yeah, and I think because you're always told that ballet has to be one certain body type, and not everyone's born with that body type. Like some people have a higher fat percentage just naturally, or higher muscle mass, bigger shoulders, bigger hips, yeah. straighter legs. I've got bowed legs, which is always,
you know, yes, we should go into that
go
too.
Go into the bowed legs.
So the bowed leg story.
Told that you're, you know, your legs are never gonna, they're not straight, so you've got to straighten them. And you know, like you're in plié position and physically like trying to squish your knees together so the back of the knees are together.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being at the time, and I think I joked to my teacher, like, they're not gonna go straight.
Yeah.
But like, I was thinking like,
so just to make that clear, Shannon was like, Shannon's legs are bowed. So if anyone that doesn't know, bowed is where your legs slightly come outwards before they go in. I'm not explaining that. I can pick, it's hard without a picture.
Kind of like not a straight leg.
Not a straight leg. Your legs are slightly out to the side.
There's going
to
be like
a gap. There's going to be a gap. But this teacher like physically tried to push your knees together, which is bone.
Every time in pliés. Yeah, every time in pliés. He'd be like, let's get those knees together. And like that with your legs on a roller, pushing your knees. Let's
pushing the legs down is also something that I was told to do multiple times, and actually almost blackmailed into, you will never have this part until you have straight hyperextended knees. And so obviously every night my friend would lay over my knees, and now I have meniscus tears in my knees, like so many things. But yeah, it really does stick with you. And I think for anyone teaching, I'm trying to think now of examples of things that were said that were like compliments that then led to I don't want to tell anyone else's story, but
I suppose it's the comparison in lessons. It was enough, like it would be like, well, blah blah, look how she dances, look how she looks, or look at her legs, look at her arms. And I suppose then you think, well, why aren't my legs like for me, I was like, why aren't my legs straight?
Was that
looking back, it's funny because I'm like, my legs will never be straight.
Interestingly, I just thought, but was that something you were aware of before you went to Ballet West?
No.
So you have no awareness of it?
No, I never knew that my legs were bowed. I was never.
Because I was never pulled up on anything that then became an issue either. Yeah. So I was almost went into it oblivious of this perfect body type.
Well, because I'm at a professional dance school, they obviously know a lot of things, so they probably know, oh yeah, so this is how you straighten your legs.
Yeah.
But yeah, never, not once did my ballet teacher ever say, and not once did they squish my knees together and force me into a straight leg.
Oh,
I'm lucky my knees
are
okay.
yeah. Definitely. And I think the other thing is, Ballet West was not the Royal Ballet School. So the Royal Ballet School, they let you in when you've got this like perfect facility.
Mm-hmm.
But we are a mixture of different body types.
Yeah.
There is such a huge variant in young dancers that went into that school
mm-hmm.
that then this comparison was probably even more so than maybe in like Royal Ballet Elmhurst or a place where everyone that was there did have sway backs and did have really amazing feet.
Mm-hmm.
But it just meant that you're striving for something that, one, you're unaware of, you didn't have in the first place, and then two, something you can never get.
Yeah, like I know, like my hips aren't going to be as flexible as some of people because that's just how my hips, I was born that way, or like some people.
Did you know that at Ballet West though?
So I think only, I think second or third year, I think when he was pushing my legs, I was.
You could feel that your ligaments were like, nope.
And I think because I could see there was no improvement, I was like, well, maybe it is just my bone structure and maybe that's never going to happen because I am working really hard to get these legs straight and even box splits. Like, I'm working really hard to get the box splits, but obviously something mechanically in my hips isn't going to go. So I think maybe second and third year, that's been a realisation. This is just my body. That I can't change it.
See, that's good because I didn't have that realisation for a long time. But again, you trust your teachers.
Yeah.
You trust like what you're told and you're in this bubble. And like the foot stretching era. So we're the foot stretching era. And actually makes me really happy that when I talk about it now, a lot of dancers who are dancing now don't even remember foot stretchers.
That's good.
Which makes me happy. But we were the year of the foot stretcher.
Yeah.
And I did stretch my feet and I did have an ankle injury. Like, it's so silly to think back on now with everything I know, but that is what I was taught to do and that is what I did.
Forcing your foot into a position it shouldn't be in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I begged my parents for a foot stretcher as well for Christmas.
They're expensive as well, aren't they?
They're like £125. It didn't work, just causes injuries. Luckily or not luckily, my friend had one, so I didn't need my own. But I remember my parents, my dad looking at it and being like, why on earth would you want to put your foot in it? And I'm like, Dad, that's just what we all do. Like, yeah. That is part of ballet. If you want to be good, you've got to stretch your feet. And my parents were obviously like, no. Yeah. Like, obviously not. But at the time, I was like, why would they not, like, why would they, were they not for this when this is what I, what I've been told that I should be doing to make myself better?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you're always, again, back to that comparison, but there's so many different body types in our school. And there's, like, that one person that was perceived as, like, perfect.
Perfect body,
so if you had anything that was different from that perfect, then you weren't good enough. And you're going to work hard to try and change it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Deep breath. I'm trying to think first, second year, if there was anything else major. What was your tour like for first? You said you enjoyed tour first year. Polonaise.
Yeah.
See, that's... Did you... Because for me, in Polonaise, I was... I still had that, like... want for like a better part.
Yeah, I suppose because I was with people that obviously that were the swans and stuff, I suppose I would want to do that, but then maybe like that already self-doubt was kicking in that maybe I'm not actually that good to be a swan.
Yeah,
but yeah, I quite enjoyed first year. And then
what was second year tour, was that
Romeo
and Juliet. Yeah, that's... what was the face for? I was in Dance of the Night in Romeo and Juliet.
I can't even remember. I think I was just like general like party.
Party girl.
Party. With a tambourine.
Romeo and Juliet. Try and think that year, again, second year was just like, I was just living my best life in second year, which means that it all kind of, I think what happened though was because I'd mentally now, I wasn't having to deal with the seizure every day or every other day, that then I could actually concentrate on my dance and my corrections. And also, I mean, I did improve a lot because I came into Ballet West maybe not with the best technique and maybe not with the best understanding of technique, that actually, however much I don't want to say anything good about the teachers, actually I did learn a lot in terms of like my technique, my foundations for ballet. And I improved, looking back, if I look at first year videos of me and then like third year videos of me, I improved so much. Like, and that was my hard work, but also because the teachers did drill into us good technique.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I, as much as it pains me, I do have to be thankful for that I did get that foundation in technique training. So yeah, second year was very like me living my best life kind of thing. But I think in that time, as you said now, I'm thinking about it, like, I was very aware of everything kind of crumbling around me.
Yeah.
I think the elephant in the room for our second year, which is why we were kind of, like, quiet for a little bit, is that that is when a lot of the things started that ultimately ended up in Ballet West shutting down. I mean, there's so much more to it than just, like, the sexual abuse allegations, which, again, is where I'm a little bit careful in what I talk about because I feel like, personally, it's not my story to tell. But it is a huge part of the experience that I feel like we both had at Ballet West. We both knew it was happening. The first day that I went to the corner shop with some of the second years, my first ever day at Ballet West, they said to me, oh, you do know that the teacher is sleeping with the pupils. And again, I just went, oh, it's normal.
Yeah, same with me. I think someone said that, like, oh, watch out for him. He's sleeping with this person. And yeah, I was like, well, that's a bit weird. But anyway,
Yeah, because you're living your little, like, dream life. Yeah, I definitely did the same thing. Whereas I think in second year is when it started to become more apparent that actually this is actively happening whilst we were at the school. And again, not to me, from none of my experiences in that sense come from internally within the school, but I definitely was still affected by the culture of that and that becoming normal, and that kind of culture of sleeping with people, and I guess just the normalization of like the power imbalances as well, like men and then students.
Yep, definitely. And I think because it was apparent in our second year that two of the female teachers left, so we were basically then just taught by men. I don't think we had any female teachers apart from drama. But looking back, I think that's why it changed for me as well, because that power, I didn't have a female ballet teacher second, third year, pretty sure.
I'd completely forgotten about that.
Yeah, and the odd contemporary teacher comes in, she was female, I suppose, she came in and out. But other than that, it was predominantly
men and all men. The guest artists that came
all
in.
The guest artists were men, and they used to then teach. They were all guys,
and
then,
they didn't just teach.
Yep, that as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think some of what you spoke about in the in your like ITV news, would you call it an article or a piece? I don't know what it's called.
Your news, your thing
was about like corrections from male dance teachers too, which is something that I don't remember. So when I actually was hearing you speak, I was like, I don't remember this. And my initial reaction was like, did that happen? Which obviously now I'm like, now I've spoken to so many people and other people that have said this same thing as well. It obviously did happen. I must have just been in this almost, again, my own little bubble that I just never noticed it. Or
I suppose noticed that it was inappropriate.
Yeah, that's it. And that's what's scary is that those things were obviously happening. But it wasn't even on my radar. It's like, this is bad.
Yeah, I suppose like at the time, like that I never realised it was... He'd make me, him as a teacher made me feel uncomfortable anyway. I just have like gut feelings about people, and I just didn't feel comfortable around him. So I suppose I did feel, you know, uncomfortable at times when he would be correcting, you know, putting his hands on you inappropriately. But I suppose not until you look back, you think, right, actually that was wrong. Like even the correction of the arm, he used to stroke down or stroke your face to move it. And then I used to be like, there's no need. Like, as a PT now, I never stroke someone's face.
It's wild because I don't remember it.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. Like, even... You think it was so normal to...
But you would have thought I'd even remember. That, it freaks me out a little bit, to be honest.
And yeah, I suppose, yeah.
When I heard one person say it originally, I was like, oh, maybe it just happened to them. And then I keep hearing the same stories. And I'm like... This must have happened. Like, how have I blocked this completely out? And even if I really, like, most things, as you say, like, when you're talking, you bring it up and I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
But this is just, like, I don't remember it at all.
I think because I was slightly older at the time, I feel like maybe I was just aware that this was making me feel uncomfortable, where I suppose being younger and in the ballet, you know, the dream, you're thinking, actually, well... This is probably correct, and that's fine. He's just helping me put my pelvis in position.
Yeah.
I suppose maybe as I'm old, slightly older, I've got that...
Like a little bit more awareness.
Slightly awareness that actually this is a bit inappropriate.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be touching, you know...
Touching me like that, yes. 100%. But again, no one ever says anything.
Yep.
So it just keeps on going.
Yeah.
Just keeps on happening.
Yep.
Scary. I think it's something that I'm so aware of now with teaching. Like when I... teach Pilates even, I'm like, oh, because there is that element of tactile, like, corrections, but I have really found myself now, especially in the last year or so, to be very hands-off of it, like,
I'm
completely
exactly
hands-off,
exactly.
And, like, using language, and you can teach using language.
Yeah, 100%, like, even in the gym, people are deadlifting, like, heavy stuff, and I'm only small, but I can obviously spot them. But not once have I felt the need to get super close, put my arms around them, touch their hips or their bum. Never. Like, even if I need to, I'm like, is that okay? I'm just here. My hands are here. If you need to drop the weight, my hands are underneath. But I'm the same. Any corrections, I do think, right, put your hip knees open a bit more, arm this way.
Yeah.
Never once have I thought, right, let me actually physically put my hands there and open their hips.
You can do it. In teach movement, you see that more and more, that actually if you move someone's arm into a place... then they're not feeling that sensation in their body to then learn that in their own movement patterns.
Yeah, to remember.
Whereas actually I found, and this wasn't ever like from because of experiences, this is just my own like clinical observations of actually if you can feel it in your own body and you can allow them that experience to feel it in their own body, then they're much more likely to recreate that when they're not with you.
Yeah, and muscle memory, you're gonna, and then remember how you got that to that position. Whereas if it's like, I don't know, your arm is in a weird position, like, well, how did I even get there?
And like, what muscles are engaging?
Yeah, like, what am I using?
So yeah, which is then stranger and stranger to think about. Because was that not one of his defence, without going into the court case too much, but I'm sure that was one of his defences of like, well, that's just how you teach ballet.
Yeah, his defence was that it was, he was trying to protect us because it's supposedly a plié is a dangerous move.
Really? So was that his response?
That was his response. And there's news articles, so I'm not making speculation. There's news article, look it up. He says that he was doing it to protect us. There was no weights involved. I don't understand how a plié is dangerous.
Hang on, but then when was he protecting us when he was telling us to, like, sit on my knees and push my knees backwards?
Yeah.
Like,
So how is that not... So he said that that's dangerous, he was protecting us and he had to correct us in that way because otherwise we were going to hurt ourselves. Which actually, looking back, that, you know, opening your plié with your hips, you create more danger. Like, you're going to pull a muscle in your hip.
Or when you push your knees or push your knees
together. But that is causing danger. I was fine with my knees just, like, with a slight bend. I was doing fine.
Oh, I shouldn't laugh. It's not funny.
No.
But then it comes back into this, like, self-advocacy. And, like, I definitely feel that... I mean, again, this is obviously me looking back in retrospect. Now I know so much more and I know who I am. But never building up from a young age that, like, this is okay and this isn't okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that even, like, years later, or, like, during maybe, like, third year of Ballet West and then kind of the years later, was something that I struggled with in terms of, like, consent and mm-hmm. saying what I thought and actually standing up for myself.
Yeah.
Which is where I'm, like, nothing that, like, terrible happened to me was maybe necessarily, like, Ballet West stuff, but that culture and what was learnt from that definitely carried into my personal life too.
And that hierarchy of, especially with the men involved, because it's obviously ballet is very female heavy, especially in training, but then to have the men kind of with the power at Ballet West, I suppose, like that with myself, like I struggled for years, obviously that dynamic, and then just being able to trust men as well, that was in dating life and friends, like mm-hmm. just that trust, because I'm like, I don't know, because all the men that we had there, you know, obviously didn't protect us or bullying comments or stuff like that.
Yeah, which isn't, I mean, another whole thing really in like dance world is that this almost... So if you think how many young girls go into ballet, like most young girls go into ballet, and then obviously as you get up the almost like standards or like you get more serious, that's going to reduce. But I mean, all the way through, what is it? It's like all, a whole class of girls and one man.
Yeah, always.
Girls so then how everywhere. Is it that we get into like professional industry or like vocational school and like even like Take Swan Lake, for example, I know that it's like a very traditional thing, but it's all women. But then who's the choreographer?
Yeah.
Who's the producer? Who's the person in charge? Who's the teacher? Who's the, like...
Even down to the pianist.
Yeah, exactly. Like, every other role within ballet typically is... I was going to say maybe it's changing, but I don't even know if it is, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, every other role is a man. Mm-hmm. And every person in the court or, like, in the class is predominantly women.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is interesting then as you... like get old and look back at that and think like, well, why is that? And
like how is it that flipped completely from like
when females have obviously been doing it for so long and what's mainly the girls for it to then be
men in charge.
Yeah,
men in charge.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. A little philosophical philosophical moment there, but no, really like interesting topic. And again, I'd love to say that it's changing, I'm trying to think of someone in my head who, there must be somebody out there, someone will probably tell me, but like a female who is now in like a major like choreographic role or as you say like stage director, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, there
must be. Me, I don't know.
Companies.
Yeah, there has to be by, so I hope there is by now. But yeah, no, so that kind of like self-advocacy and standing up for yourself is another whole topic in itself. And again, in the last episode, we said about you kind of like standing up for what you believe in and your values kind of later on.
Mm-hmm.
But standing up for yourself in the actual environment of class,
mm-hmm.
I don't think I did it once.
Yeah, I feel maybe that's why my second and third year, I felt like I maybe said some stuff to the teacher afterwards or outside of class. But like that, because of that, I definitely felt like my grades were then marked down. I was given a rat roll in Nutcracker.
Oh, your rat roll.
A rat roll, which I owned to this day. But
wait, go into that a little bit. So third year, to like provide a little bit of context, but third year we were touring Nutcracker.
Mm-hmm.
So we're third year by this point. So you'd expect that you get given like flowers, lead snowflakes, rolls, like lead rolls. You know, that's kind of what you expect.
Are you going to use that for your showreel?
Yeah. And
then I was the only third year cast as a rat, which I believe was a consequence of speaking out over certain issues, I suppose, mm-hmm. with other students, inappropriate behaviour from the teacher. And also because I stood up to him saying, because he was obviously our landlord as well and all of that. So I stood up to him saying that he was trying to control our lives which he was looking back. But I feel like because of that role, and also my degree was marked down, a lot of the comments just didn't align with any of the other teachers, you know, saying I was, you know, unprofessional, didn't show up to class, you know, bad technique, whatever. But you look at the other teachers, they were saying excellent student, you know, always yeah. here working hard. So, but then that just shows that people don't want to speak up, because, you know, by third year I'd zoned out of, you know, ballet as a career, and I was like, I just need to get this degree done and, you know, get out of here.
Which I think a lot of people had.
Yeah, they were like, let's just, right, speed this up, let's go,
because
head down.
By the end of third year, I think the last ballet class for third year, there was me and one other girl. Everyone else had left.
I know I didn't go for the, like, the past month, because I was like, well, I've got my degree.
Yeah, as soon as everyone had their degree results, they went.
Wow.
Because I think, actually, I don't think it was the last. So they had timetabled, but I think I also knew that I knew I was hurting. So, like, physically hurting. So I knew that ballet class was difficult. So I kind of wanted to make the most of the classes I had whilst mm-hmm. I was still there. And I wanted to stay because I had friends that were local there too. So I wanted to stay in the environment. The last couple classes that were timetabled, there was hardly anybody there because everyone was out there. And then me and this other last person ended up actually just joining in with the classes from second year, because there were no timetabled classes anymore.
Yeah.
Everyone was out there.
Which shows that in third year, actually, everyone had the same mindset. Right, let's just head down. As soon as we've got this, let's bolt.
Yeah, get out of there as quick as you can.
Yeah. But yeah, so then that speaking up about issues, it shows
then
that
you get punished.
Don't want to, because there were consequences, and I can see that in other students that were maybe, you know, in years below, that maybe spoke out. They were quite, you know, loud with their opinions, and they were cast as roles or had roles taken away from them or marked down, or you know, so it was obvious that happened.
I think that's part of the control that they had over us that again maybe doesn't happen, I don't know, maybe so much in other schools, because we went on tour every year, and tour was such a big part of our year, that then what roles we had and the respect you had from teachers really showed throughout the year as well.
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to tell anyone else's story, so I don't want to go into it too much detail, but there was definitely a role in a particular tour that someone had a very, very good part, and then they put on weight, and then that part was taken away.
Yeah.
And I remember that being a huge thing, but also not just for that person, which I'm sure it was horrible for that person, but also almost like a lesson for the rest of us.
Yeah, like
we
warning.
All watched it happen.
Yeah, like a warning, like if this happens to you, well, this is the consequence.
Yeah. And watching that happen is gonna make you more aware of your body anyway. But no, yeah, that just kind of came back to me too, which again is the whole like emotional manipulation. Which is something that, I mean, is definitely part of what I feel happened to me more in terms of the emotional manipulation rather than anything else, because I mean, we were all in the same boat of absolutely loving it, wanting to do the best we possibly could, or at least going into it wanting to do the best that we possibly could. Like having this, like, I'm finally at ballet school, like I've made it, but then to every day be told that you're not working hard enough, or you're not good enough, or you've not done this well enough, or you've not tried hard enough on this.
Yeah.
And that constant, like, almost seeking approval, because you get that one little compliment and then suddenly your day's made and it's like the best thing ever. So like constantly trying to get that, but always being told it's just not quite good enough is that's like emotionally hard. That's really difficult.
Yeah. And I think it was always put on us as well that you should be in the studio after the day's finished, and like we sometimes would have a long day. And you were told if you're not in the studio, especially when we lived quite close, like where I lived was only 5 minute walk, in my first year, 5 minute walk up to the school, and told that like, you should be in there in the evening. And then if you're not, then you're obviously not serious about what you're doing. But actually in the evening, you should be, you know, recovering, fueling, resting for the next day. And someone I lived with was there all the time, you know, and addicted to that after school.
I was going to say, I am one of those people that fed into that. But I don't know how, or I suppose it's still in me a little bit now in terms of like, I'm very, if I want to do something, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
But I was one of those people that, like, I didn't go home in holidays. Like, mm-hmm. I did the extra summer schools through summer, and I stayed in Easter and did, like, extra classes, and I was up there late in the studio. I did advanced two. I was the only third year that did advanced two up until we graduated, and I took that exam in third year, and I was the only person that managed to do, because I'm crazy, not because I think it's good, it's because I was stupid, but I was doing all of our timetable classes. I used to do an extra point class with the year below me sometimes. I'd stay in the evenings. I did my my dissertation was a independent dance project, which meant that I was doing rehearsals for that until like so late at night in the evenings, taking all the extra classes for ROD. Like, I was the person that was in the studio from like the moment of warm up. Do you remember the competitions to get there in the morning for warm up? Like, it was like, who's first in the studio?
I used to come in like 1 minute to the class. I think in my third year, I was like, oh, yeah.
But that's such a like toxic environment.
It shouldn't be like that.
No. But that's what I was praised for, was the fact that I worked hard, and that is what became my whole thing. It's like, oh, Chloe, she's not very good, but at least she works hard. Like, yeah. I feel like that was my thing. So if that's what I had going for me, then that's what I did more of. Mm. And that's what I, because I was being praised for, was what then I kept on doing and kept on doing.
Yeah.
I was never praised for being good, but at least I got praised for working hard.
You are working hard.
at least she's trying.
Yeah, she tried. Yeah.
Oh dear. But yeah, that was a massive thing, and that was something that again took a while for me to almost break that personality trait that was put on me of like always working hard, always kind of positive. But to like carry that through into the years after Ballet West was when like I was like, oh, this needs to change, this isn't healthy, and something that like I obviously advocate way more now of having those like outside interests, and very aware of not making, even though I absolutely love my work, but not making that my whole identity, because there's so much more to life than that one thing, which is where I very scarily was at Ballet West, was in this like, I work hard and I do ballet.
Yeah.
Which is sad, and not like, obviously it's fine to love it, but like I look back at me then and I'm like, how did I keep that for 3 years? Mm. And that's kind of sad.
Yeah. Especially when you're so young, like when you're 16 to 21, like that's meant to be, you know, a fun time and you're still figuring out, but I suppose like that, it's a shame that they put the pressure on to focus on ballet rather than just be like, look, live your life as a 20-year-old or 18-year-old.
Yeah. But then my brain almost goes to like, but then we did used to get told to go out and almost like, I might cut this bit out, but like, I'm sure they used to tell us to go out and get with people.
Explore your body.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was this thing of like, you're a virgin, you're not a virgin.
Yeah.
And that, and with parts and whatever tour it was of like, oh, great dancer, but like doesn't understand her sexuality, maybe.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I think I remember that.
Which is then like a mindfuck of like, yes, you're supposed to love dance, but then you're also supposed to go out and get drunk and get with people.
But then it's banned because you're not allowed to drink because they said drinking was poisonous to you. But then it's like, but also then do that. But then don't do that. Then
yeah, that's such a confusing message. Yeah.
So no wonder we were like, ah!
Yeah, crazy. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how to bring this back round. Okay, so we've kind of like gone through a few themes now of different things that were probably quite wrong with what went on, and that's just not even like debatable. Like there's so much that went on that was just, that's not good. But I think both of us have kind of touched on the fact that we don't regret it, and I wouldn't change it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing about it that I would change. I'd never want to go through that experience without having the health issues, without having the injuries, because it would mean that I'm not doing what I do today. Mm-hmm. And you've mentioned too that you like wouldn't change anything at all.
Yeah.
What do you think is one of the like main things that you've carried, either like principles or like personality traits or things that you've learnt that you still carry with you now?
I think that mental like resilience and mental strength. I suppose because up there at times you did feel so alone in, you know, what's going on, even though now we look back and we see everyone was going through the same stuff.
Yeah.
But I suppose you just had to get out of that whatever dark hole you were in and get to class and do what you got to do. So I suppose from that strength, as, you know, stage with me now, and also just looking back and, you know, those comments and things, like, you know, they were wrong and the whole environment was completely wrong and shouldn't have even been there, that whole school. But from those experiences, you know that actually we survived that, we got through that, and now I know anyway, like, how to act as a person. Like, I don't want to be like those people. Like, it inspires me that I don't want to be ever like those people. Yeah, I don't want to be that that family.
Yeah.
I don't want to say those comments to people, because you know how it hurts, like, on the other side. Or I don't want to, you know, talk about people's weight or their diet in a negative way, or, oh, you're eating that, you're eating this. Like, I know now that I never want to be like that, so it's inspired me to be the opposite, which is hopefully very positive.
Yeah.
In comparison to that. So I suppose that's what I've gained from the whole 3 years there, is how to be more like a decent human being.
Yeah.
And not be like that. They taught us how not to be a decent human being.
Yeah, how human beings, not to,
how not to be act. A decent person. Yeah.
No, that's great. I think, well, you kind of touched on it at the beginning of that kind of sentence as well, but the like, you have got through that and you can do anything, and that resilience is something that I definitely have too. Even down to, maybe it sounds silly, but when I graduated from physio and going to interviews, not one person I sat down with was ever horrible. And I went into real world thinking that that was what the real world was like. And actually having that realization of, well, one, the resilience of, like, from me and inside my brain of, oh, nothing's ever going to be as bad. So I know that I can I can do this. I've got life. I've got it down. But also the realization of, like, actually people want to help you.
Yeah. There's decent people around.
Like, nearly everyone I've spoken to in the industry, and I try and be this for everyone that reaches out to me as well, but when people do what they love and they're good at what they do, they want to help, rather than what we had, which was this almost like barrier.
Yeah.
To just, I was going to say abuse, but like constant, like, being put down if you ask for something.
Yeah.
Whereas actually in real world, everyone wants to lift you up.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that people who are still in the dark depths of performer's world still find. Like, you go to an audition, you get told no. You go and do, I don't know, like, a class, and you get 7 corrections, and no one says, oh, well done. But actually, once you've been through that, the real world is easy.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And people like that, they never comment on your weight, or they, you know, working in an office, say, I've not worked in an office, but even working in an environment where there's, you know, different people, different job roles in the place. Like, I worked in pubs and stuff, and not one person, like, commenting on what you're eating or what you look like. Or something. And you're like, oh, like, actually, this is the normal world, but that world was not normal. And it shows you that, it gives you hope from people that they do, if you've got any issues, they do want to listen, and they do want to help you.
Yeah.
And they aren't going to put you down all the time, or at all. And that, yeah, there are decent people around.
Yeah, asking for help as well. Like, something that I definitely came out from Ballet West with was that I was a lone wolf and I was doing my own thing, and, like, no one else was going to help me, but I'd, like, help myself and I could do it on my own. But actually, probably until, like, last year or so, I felt that really deeply. Whereas, again, people want to help you.
Yeah.
And you can ask for help, and it's okay.
Yeah.
And you don't have to hide, like, all those feelings that I had and everything that I was going through. Like, you don't have to hide it.
No, yeah. And it's fine to... And, like, people have good days, bad days, and I think it's acknowledging that you do have days where you've got low energy, you actually, you know, you've lost your passion for the
thing. Yes, that's a huge thing.
But it's okay, and then you'll pick yourself up the next day, whereas I think at ballet school, they'll be like, well, you've made that low, well, that's your own fault, well, and then you just get deeper and deeper, whereas, you know, there are people around to help you, you know, get back up and, you know, get you back on track to what you need to do.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so definitely resilience. Definitely some, like, I mean, 100% something that I've taken from, maybe not even ballet school, but just, like, dance, like, dance culture or dance world. Is like, we've been told no 100 times, right?
Yeah.
You get told
more no's 100
times.
Yes. Yeah.
So then, like, no's don't scare me anymore. And that's definitely something that I wouldn't be where I am now if I hadn't have asked 101 people to help, or 101 people, or, like, sent off job applications to things I wasn't really qualified for, or, like, reach out and ask for something that, like, ultimately I've been very lucky, as I said, like, everyone does want to help. But if I had that fear of knowing me, then maybe I wouldn't have reached out to those people, and I wouldn't have taken those opportunities, and I wouldn't have done those things.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something that I've, like, taken from the experiences of always being told no or always being always expecting the worst to go into everyday life and almost expect the worst, but then everything works out.
Yeah.
And that's another magical thing that I think a lot of people who have gone through maybe a traditional education don't have. It's like they won't apply for something because maybe they're scared they're going to get rejection.
Yeah.
I'm not scared of being rejected.
Yeah, because I think even going into my fitness, you know, personal training, I've taught quite a lot of fitness classes. And I go into the class being like, I'm just going to deliver it. And I don't care what people think. If they don't like it, they can come up and obviously tell me what I can improve on. But a lot of people I work with were very scared of what people would think of their class, and
that's so interesting,
and that rejection that a lot of like guys as well, they'd be like, oh no, like I'm not prepared yet, I need to do more planning, I'm very nervous to do this class because what if they don't like it. I'm like, well, what if they don't like it? Like, at least them say, yeah, give me some feedback. But it's interesting to see them, I'm like, oh, it's fine, like just go in and do it. But because maybe because they haven't had that training, they haven't had that experience, they're so anxious with what people are thinking and being rejected and being told, actually, that class is rubbish. But someone said, actually, that class is rubbish, I was like, oh, right, let me see how I won't do that class again, I'll do someone else.
No,
that's fear of rejection, and that fear of someone saying that's rubbish, whereas actually we were used to being like, you're rubbish.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's everyday occurrence.
That was just like, as you were saying that, I was like, that totally makes sense, because even with my like Pilates teaching and like reformer training that I've done probably more recently, is that I just got on with it, and I'd never really thought about it, but actually when you were saying that, I was thinking, out of everyone that I did my training with, I'm probably got into teaching, like, I'm probably, actually, to be fair, I was like, next day I was teaching classes, but...
But you just go into it, no fear, just go. Yeah.
I just get on with it.
Yeah, and so, yeah, just jump in and be like, oh, can you do this class? Yeah, I've never taught it before, but I'll do it, let's go.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of people...
I guess it's that openness to being wrong as well.
Yeah.
And, like, openness, like, I guess it's strange, really, now I'm really unpicking, like, dance training, but... It's just like the psychology of it. But it's strange, really, that you put yourself in a room every day, you're doing the best you can, but you're also wanting to be corrected so you can improve.
Yeah.
So when you take that into everyday life, so for me, when I first started doing physio, like, I put myself in that situation, but in the same way, I'm doing the job the best I can, but I'm open for criticism, and then I make improvements on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've never thought about that before.
Yeah. And actually, you know, thinking of that, taking corrections, but in like the real life scenario in a workplace, whereas people might not think of that, they don't want corrections. Like I used to say to people, like, actually just tell me, what did you like, what did you not like, how can I improve? Whereas like the everyday Joe in the gym would be like, oh, I don't want to know what people think. So yeah, it's quite interesting how that moves around. And
well, that's opened up, like, because even if I think back to even if I think back to physio placements, like I'd get my report back, and if there was nothing on it that was like, I can improve on this, I'd be like, like I wouldn't trust them.
Yeah.
Like, tell me what I'm doing wrong. Like,
yeah,
or
it's true, yeah.
Actually, I didn't make it through my first physio placement because I got very ill. But my my third placement when I was like really getting into it and like felt confident being on the ward. And I remember them being like, yeah, really good. Like, yeah, your communication skills are really good. Yeah, your physio is good. Yeah, you've done this really well. And I used to get to the end of the week and I'd be like, tell me something to improve. And they'd be like, you're so hard on yourself. It's like, no, I'm not being hard on myself. I know that I have so much to learn. Like that awareness of there's always so much more to learn and you're never going to be perfect.
There's always room for improvement.
But I've really taken that into the rest of my life. Like that idea of, and I mean, I suffered massively from imposter syndrome for a few years with physio. But it probably does come from that same place. It's like a therapy session.
Yeah.
It probably does come from that same place of, to me, there's always something else I can do better.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a bad thing.
No,
but that has come from dance training and like going in the morning and being like, how can I improve today?
Yeah. And I suppose that maybe at the time, that negative experience of being told, you know, you're not good at this, whatever. But now that's built that resilience to then like that.
To
always
then keep improving.
Yeah.
We also touched in your episode about like the transferable skills of like being so body aware into other sports too, which I think is a massive one. Like you, as a dancer and with that physical training, you're going to be good at any other sport you put your mind to.
Yeah.
And that's really cool.
Yeah.
That's a fun
coordination
thing.
And moves, like with kickboxing that we mentioned in the last episode, that there's a lot of sequences, so you can transfer that as people struggle with just basic steps to side to side.
It's funny when you come from dance world to then work, because I worked with general pop for like general population and physio for a couple of years, and it's funny when you see what normal people move like when you've been surrounded.
And some people can't actually walk properly, like they think it's normal, but actually people can't walk, or
they have
Awareness of your own body. Like, a lot of people have no awareness of their body. Like, I'll be teaching classes or stretch classes, and just people just don't know how to move their arms or their legs, and they don't know how to, which is like, how do you not know that this is your, you know, you should do this stretch? And it's quite interesting that you see
so actually, physically
people don't know that.
No, general pop do not know how to move a lot of the time.
They don't know.
It's quite funny when you watch it from the other side. I guess then, like, physical, like, the other things, I think I said earlier on as well that one of the big things that I hate to give the school credit for, but I do have to, is this, like, background in movement training. So, like, the ballet technique we were taught was ahead of a lot of other teachers in the UK. This way that we were taught in sensations and, like, how things move and how things feel when you move. That's something that was actually so, what's the word, advanced in how we were training. That I didn't realise until I, one, saw dancers who have trained in other places and trained in other ways, and two, went through my whole reformer Pilates journey and, like, really rediscovering how I moved in my own body. But those foundations of movement is something that I am very grateful for that I have, and that does really shape my practice of how I look at movement and assess movement. That is something that I do have a lot of gratitude for. A good foundation, which I'm sure it's the same in your PT. You look at people and you're like, that's not moving right.
Yeah.
Like, how do you tell that straight away?
Yeah.
Like, because I'm magic.
Yeah.
I just know, because I look at you, do one squat, and I know exactly how every single joint in your body moves.
Yeah.
Which most normal, I could say normal people, but most normal people don't have that.
No, yeah, they don't have that awareness of,
like,
body,
looking at other people
body.
Moving.
Yeah,
or, like,
and seeing what's the issue.
Watching some people teach who don't have a movement background, teach like a stretch, for example,
yes,
but they don't quite understand in their head what it feels like, and you can tell that when people are teaching, when people are saying cues because they know they should do,
and just doing this stretch into that stretch, but not knowing what are you benefiting, or why are you doing it,
and that feeling of it, the sensation. I always go back to sensation in bodies, but that is something that is a huge building block to what I do and why I'm good at what I do now, as I'm sure sure with you too. So yes, lots of positives to take out of it. And again, like both of us said, I definitely don't regret anything, like, this whole journey that I've been on, and you've kind of said similar thing, which is really nice. There you go. There's a long conversation. I feel like, again, it turned to a bit of a therapy session, but I think it's just good to talk about, even if there's somebody else out there, whether you're going into vocational training, hopefully we haven't scared you. Again, I want to emphasize that we've definitely had almost like a experience under a magnifying glass, because I think having, obviously I speak to so many performers from all different schools all around the country, around the world, and there are shared experiences, but if you are about to go into vocational training, don't let that scare you, because we've definitely had like an enlarged version of what goes on. But I think the takeaway is that you just have to stand up for yourself. You have to know you're right from wrong.
Yeah, and I think listen to your body as well, like that with injuries or something that's just not feeling right. I think it's, and also I felt like at Ballet West, like I mentioned earlier, you do feel alone in the situation. So I hope, like, us discussing is going to make people think, actually, you know, going into the school, like, that's not right. That teacher correcting us that way is not right, or my past experience, actually, that wasn't, you know, correct.
Yeah.
So I think that people will then know it's, unfortunately, not uncommon, these things that go on, but then hopefully the awareness is getting better, then people are saying, no, actually, you know, don't speak to me like that. Like, maybe not saying that way, but be like,
I think even if you don't have the confidence to do that, it's knowing that it is a shared experience. I think a lot of the time when you go through things like this, you think it is just you.
Yeah.
Even when we obviously look back at our time and, like, actually now talking and realising that everyone was going through something, but you all felt very isolated in what you were personally going through. But there are so many people that understand what it is like. So, yes, if you're pre-vocational and you're going into it, stand up for yourself, know you're right from wrong, and listen to your body more than anything else. But if you're already in vocation too, you can definitely like find other people going through the same thing, reach out. I'm going to put resources in the show notes for this podcast for various different things. So if there's anything that you need to reach out, whether it's nutrition advice, more down the route of emotional abuse from teachers, bullying within vocational schools, everything surrounding nutrition as well. We'll put everything that I can possibly think of in the show notes so that there is something useful that you can go and turn to if you need it. And then those of you that are postgrad, like us,
how are you doing?
Yeah, no, definitely, how are you doing?
Let us know.
But also, again, like I try and turn things back into that positive, like we did at the end there, but there are always things that you can take from it. And again, it's taking care of yourself now and opening up a little bit. I think, as I said, I processed a lot of my stuff much later, much thanks to Shannon, like we said as well. But it is the people speaking up that help you process it. And it's okay if there's still things that you're like, what the hell was that? Because I still have things that I don't talk about that I'm like, what the hell happened there?
What was that about?
But again, there are people out there and we will put the resources in. Talk to your friends, check in with your friends. And thank you
for having me. It's good to, again, use our voices to hopefully, you know, raise awareness and keep then maybe inspire another person to. Thank you. Continue what you're doing. It's so good.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend who might find this podcast useful or reassuring. I want to continue opening up conversations around injuries, dance culture and health. You can keep up to date with what's happening on Dance Physio UK across all platforms or join me for online Pilates at dancephysiouk.com.